What I indeed need to start my creative part of work is definitely music. I mean, for me, you could also do it with drugs, but then you can't. Just the only tool able to somehow make me leave this kind of very business part of the business as well. You need to get like in a very different mindset, which is kind of disconnected to the normal needs of your daily life.
If you could spend a moment with some remarkable people and discover what their life sounds like, what would you ask? Welcome to Are We On Air? An audio encounter. I'm Armand Afey, and each episode will feature one conversation with an inspiring friend of mine who will share with us the soundtrack to their life. Cheers, beautiful people, and welcome back to another interesting and beautiful episode of Are We On Air? This week's guest is none other than the wonderful Polish-German multidisciplinarian artist that is Alicia Quade. Alicia and I got together in her studio slash compound in Berlin a good few months ago to go over her life soundtrack, but also to get a sneak peek behind the curtain and see how incredible sculptures and large installations are being made. And it takes a village working with rocks, steel and glass, and it's quite impressive. We talked about her upbringing in Soviet Poland all the way to her rise to art stardom in Berlin. We explored how music influences her works, how she manages to balance her creativity and running a business at the same time to having her own record label. And of course, we had to talk about our crazy nights and days at the now infamous King Size Bar in Berlin, RIP. You can watch this interview on our YouTube channel at Are We On Air, where you get to peek into Alicia's studio with me. Lots of great music and stories. I hope you enjoyed, and I'll speak to you soon.
Welcome to Are We On Air, Alicia Quade.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm excited. What's to come?
Yeah, in for a ride. Well, thanks, first of all, to have us in your beautiful studio here in Berlin.
Of course, warmly welcome on the very cold December day.
Yeah, it's freezing, but up here in your semi-apartment, it's
yeah,
very cozy.
It's a bit jungle-like.
The jungle, the heat is on. And why don't we start talking about music and the life story of you? What's your earliest significant musical memory that shaped you as an artist?
I mean, it's hard to say if it shaped me as an artist because it kind of depends
when you... person, maybe.
Yeah, when you kind of, whatever, understand yourself as an artist. But I would say, like, my first strong memory to any kind of a song is probably a very 80s classy, which is Voyage, Voyage from the Gisellas.
Oh, wow.
But that is very much, let's say, very connected to my biography, which I was not fully aware of back then. Because that was like released, I think, exactly in the year when I left Poland. I mean, not me, but my parents left, kind of talked me, and I left Poland. And I think so. Probably everybody around me knew, but I didn't, that we are leaving the country.
Oh, wow.
And so like my older cousins would turn that on very loudly, and we've been all singing it. I mean, I was not speaking any English, so I was more like imitating kind of a singing. But then, actually, I was speaking to my brother about that for another, I don't know, interview. I was asked something about that time. And then he was remembering me that probably I'm wrong and my memory is making a little bit wrong to me because he told me, and then I remembered, but I'm not sure, I think both is a little bit right, that when we have been to the refugee camp here in Germany, there was one crazy woman running around the corridors all the time. And she was listening to the song super loudly.
Oh.
And so I think both is somehow right. And so yeah, probably the first song I kind of, you know, tried to repeat. I've been singing and I was like about 7 or 8 years old, yeah.
Voyage, voyage, vol dans les hauteurs.
amazing how that song is now part of your DNA, like it's literally capturing that moment.
Yeah, somehow, because of course, probably just because I remember it, of course, because it is kind of connected to those time when we left, you know, like one system to the other. And that was, yeah, quite a significant moment, of course. I mean, backwards, not that it was a very significant moment.
Was it a traumatic experience?
And no, I would like, not say, you know, just... I mean, I'm always asked that. I mean, it is always traumatic experience. Also, like, I mean, people will blame me if I say that now, but I see it as far as I am able to influence it, also as a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I never wanted it to be a dramatic, I mean, experience. But what means dramatic? Yeah, I mean, dramatic can be positive and negative. So, yeah, I mean, let's say dramatic probably, yes, but I would not say, I mean, I would not see it as a negative-related drama. It's just, of course, if you leave, like, you know, like a communistic country and then you end up in a very Western country, of course, that is quite a move. And of course, it does something to you one way or the other. But I mean, there are more dramatic things, you know? So it's like, I mean, this is like what people all around the world do since hundreds and millions of years. So it's quite a normal.
We didn't invent it. Do you remember like a Polish track from your childhood?
Yeah, so there've been quite a few. And it's a very sad actually in my music, it's like part of my musical experience because I got a suitcase full of records from my father. And it was all records, say, this band, what kind of music they made in the Polish 70s and 80s, which have been like the Western music, but not really because it was forbidden to import Western music. So it would be something which would exactly have the sound of the Velvet Underground, but it was not the Velvet Underground, but Tom Celeste. It would be something which probably exactly had the sound of, you know, like the Pixies, but it would be not because they've been copying it. I mean, it was all in Polish. And one band I remember was called Bielizna, but I could not find it anywhere else online because and then I got this suitcase from my father's and I would DJ in Art Academy. Was this Polish records.
Oh, wow.
Which was amazing because people would like, they've been like freaking out thinking it's Sonic Youth or something. And not even it's a little bit more ahead actually than Sonic Youth. But, I mean, all this kind of sounds from the early 80s and late 70s, like, you know, punk and some, which you obviously would think it's things you know from the West, but it was not. So I was quite successful with my, with my Polish, you know, like kind of secret idea set. But then it got stolen. And actually, that was the last time I was DJing because I was like, I was like, no, okay,
never again.
Never
played a king size?
Like, I did, okay. Yeah. Probably not the last. It was not probably the last thing, but it was like, I was doing that until this moment quite a lot. But then I was really so upset that somebody's taking that away from me. And it was just like a Jorundgang thing at the academy in Berlin. Yeah, so this is kind of the
Maybe I can still find that track like on YouTube.
Because then I was hardly trying to find that like online, but just nothing online really existing. So it's something I think you need probably to go to some old, you know, record stores in Poland or something to find it. I have to ask my father again as well. But I remember one band was for sure called Bielizna. Oh, and there's another one. Wait, it's 80s as well. It's called New Kids of Death. New Kids of Death. It's also like...
Wow, okay. Not New Kids
but
on the Block,
never,
New Kids of Death.
You know, so it's nothing you can really find. But this is like, you know, from this Polish, let's say, section.
Dlatego teraz strona A.
But that came actually a little bit later, not when I was in Poland, because when I was in Poland, I was still a child.
So, yeah.
You know, and then if something would be interesting to me, it was not like Polish music, but probably, you know, it's a little tiny bit of Western music, which we could kind of get in.
Catch on the radio, yeah. And I know it's very difficult, but how would you describe yourself in 3 songs? Who are you in 3 songs?
Oh, in 3? Not just in 1. Oh, but I try my best.
You get
probably,
3.
Probably. But, you know, I'm very 90s still, unfortunately.
Stay with me.
But still with the 70s, probably vibe or something. I would say it's probably Lou Reed's Perfect Day.
Just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park. And then later, when it gets dark, we go home. Just a perfect day. Feed animals in the zoo. Then later, a movie too, and then home.
I would say it's probably Fischer's Zeit Berlin.
In Berlin! In Berlin, Berlin!
I would like to say, like, a good song from Nirvana now, because it was super important for me when I was a teenager. I mean, but it's hard to say that I would describe myself as much as teen spirit. Hopefully not. So I probably better say PJ Harvey. It's All the Mess or something.
The Mess We're In.
Yes, It's the Mess We're In.
With Tom York.
Yeah.
Beautiful track. I was just listening to the other day. That's why it's so fresh in my memory.
Yeah.
Sit in silence, you look me in the eye directly. You met me, I think it's Wednesday, the evening, the mess we're in, and oh.
But I mean, it's all a little bit back. I mean, I sometimes feel like when I sing about music that, you know, I'm kind of stuck in the past, even if I'm not that old. But somehow I think there's like this very period in everybody's life when you still try to identify yourself somehow. And that is when probably music is also like speaking to you the strongest. And then you keep this moment and all else is still super interesting and new, but it never gets this kind of access. Potential importance.
I love that. When I think about your work, when I look at your work, there are 2 things that come to my mind, and please correct me if I'm wrong. One is it's capturing movement in a moment, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the other thing is questioning everything, which I love. And that's also, to quote the late Virgil Abloh, that was his mantra, I question everything. How can one acquire this skill set to think like that? Because most people don't, right?
I don't know, but you know, I, on the other hand, question how, and I think I'm a little bit jealous, I mean, that people can believe I can't. I never could. even that I was raised in the most Catholic kind of countries on of this planet. One of the most Catholics, yeah. So we're not like super together with some, you know, we're probably together with Italy and Spain.
Yeah.
But in a super Catholic surrounding, so I did all the things which you do, you know, like and whatever. And I mean, I have like monks and nuns in my family and all of that. And they've been putting me to church and tried everything. But I was never like, even like, I think the first time I've been in a church, I was like, sorry, but this is not, who's saying, you know, what has telling, me, yeah. What telling, why should I believe that? Anyways, but I don't mean it just like religion-wise, but it's like, indeed, like believing in general. I would like to believe in things sometimes better than I do, but I can't. And it was always like that. I mean, I'm kind of very skeptical about everything. And I think like everything is just like agreement and it is what it is. And when you're like curious enough and you start to, I mean, it's not starting even with probably questioning, but more like, I think it started for me really with not believing or like questioning why I should believe something which somebody else is telling me.
Mm.
And why this person can know. And why the teacher can know. And why the professor can know. And things like that. And then you start to research a little bit about those things which you kind of can't believe in.
Mm.
And you don't even know, you don't need to be a scientist, but if you have kind of a logical thinking, it is very clear and obvious, I mean, that it's hard to believe in anything.
Yeah.
Because even if you know about the chair you're sitting on, it's not a chair in the end. I mean, it's not there. It's just that you need like a tool for physical, for like a social interaction, which is like talking to each other. And that's why you have a chair and then, you know, whatever. It goes further and further. And then you automatically end up in the void, in the space. I don't think, because people are asking me if I have a very special education in science. No, I don't. It's more like that I think I'm...
It's a scientific point of view, really.
It's a scientific like point of view, but it's more like a curious, logical curiosity, I would explain it. But it's not that I'm educated in that, and probably better even that I'm not. Because if I would, I
would go even further.
I don't know, I would go somewhere else. I mean, I wouldn't definitely not do what I do.
Are we professor, doctor?
Yeah, I mean, I'm missing actually this part. I always think, and I think it's like an artist, probably most artists think that, it always feels like, you know, we are not educated in anything. So it's like kind of, you know, I sometimes wished I would had like a proper education. But anyways, yeah.
Well. Finally didn't. Look
yeah,
where we
it's
are.
Fine. So, yeah.
It's a nice trajectory. Yeah. Well, we're in your studio and I saw you down to have a disco ball and a sound system in one of the studios. Do you create like audio mood boards when you create? You listen to music when you are actually in a studio? Or has maybe even a track or an artist influence a piece?
I do a lot, but it's more like, actually, you know, I did all this sound system and the disco sphere and all that because I somehow had this imagination that we would all like listen to music very loud while we are working. It's not working this way because people need to kind of, you know, like focus, talk to each other and focus on, so it's not working like that. But we could. But what I indeed really necessarily need to start my creative part of work is definitely music. It's like kind of something which is the only tool which is able to somehow make me leave this kind of very business-like part of the business as mm-hmm. well. But it's not as romantic sometimes as most people believe, but because I feel like on a certain point, you are also doing things like everybody else does who is possibly running a company. So it's like, you know, like checking budgets, talking to employees, blah, blah, blah. You know,
you're basically the director of an
entity. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you know, yeah. I mean, like I said, I have all these people I'm talking to. I mean, we are doing a beautiful creative work still, but it's more like a... Yeah, it's work, really, yeah. But I have this amazing pleasure that the other part of my work, which is also one part of many parts of the work, is to be with myself and to somehow get in a mood which is allowing me to create this kind of way of thinking, I'm thinking, to research, to make connections in my mind, which are probably not whatever, essentially logical to others, but to me, doing sketches, do all of that. And this is kind of hard to describe how that is happening, but I think that all musicians or like whoever, or like writers, or even mathematicians or whoever knows what I'm talking about. It's like you need to get like in a very different mindset, which is kind of disconnected to like the normal needs of your whatever daily life, and which is kind of bringing you in a kind of, yeah, very euphoric and sensitive and sad but furious feeling. And you can just do it with music. I mean, for me, you could also do it with drugs, but then you can't. You know, it's hard still to...
let's focus work.
Yeah, it's hard to focus. So yeah, it is what I'm usually doing since many years. And then, but I don't do it in the big halls as you probably would expect it to happen, but in my small little cabinet downstairs.
Yeah.
And then I just, yeah, listen to almost the same things quite a lot, but quite loud. And then I'm kind of getting in this, you know, strange...
And to give it a soundtrack, what track should we play?
A little bit boring, probably, but I'm still...
There's
so,
no boring answer.
I don't know. I love David Bowie since the very beginning. And so, but you know, these very old things, you know, like Space Oddity, for example, I was listening to that when I was art student, 90s years old, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to reach the stars, whatever. But I still love it because it has so much
euphoria.
You
have reached the stars with some of your pieces,
you know,
right?
Still, they're still space, whatever.
This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade. And the papers want to know whose shirts you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule. This is Major Tom to ground control. I'm stepping through the door. And I'm floating in a most peculiar way. And the stars look very different today. For here am I sitting in a tin can.
I love Peter Harvey, as I said.
I lost my heart under the bridge to that little girl. So much to me. And now I moan. And now I holler. She'll never know just what I
I love this kind of very strange band, which I've been obsessed for a while, at Cigarettes After Sex.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, love. I love them.
Yeah.
Nothing's gonna hurt you, baby. As long as you're with me, your picture's fine. Nothing's gonna hurt you, baby. Nothing's gonna take you from my side. When I dance in my living room.
I love Lebanon Hanover.
Can you not see?
We'll add it all to the playlist.
I tried it with classic as well, but yeah, a little bit harder to get. So, I mean, Strauss is also doing it sometimes. Yeah. So Nirvana as well, the 90s have been my teenage time. I was completely, you know, like, let's say, overlapping my personal feelings with Kurt Cobain and those kind of, you know, grunge movements. So, and that is still very important. Even, you know, like Hole, you know, so, I mean, I also love that. I'm not listening to that anymore so much, but still sometimes it's Rage Against the Machine, which is also like hard 90s thing. So it's very, yeah.
I heard the machinery early on, so it's like trying to go against that sound of heavy machinery downstairs. Talking about machinery, like technology obviously plays a role in your life and in your work. And I was wondering, as an artist, if the technology changes as it does, is the message changing or is it message stays the same, the medium changes?
I believe that the message should never change with the technique, because it's like no matter what you use, the most important is to create a strong message or like feeling, not even message, don't need a message, but like emotion, feeling, whatever. And whatever you need to achieve that, you need to achieve that. But you need to know techniques as well. So I don't believe that you can invent, you can speak, you know, strongly in a technique which you're not fully aware of. So it's like, you know, that's why I'm not doing many VR pieces. I tried some.
Yeah.
But I'm not fully, you know, kind of educated in it. I don't know about it 100%. So if you don't know about it 100%, you can just translate other pieces in another technique. But then you are not picking up the quality of techniques. Mm. So it's kind of difficult to get in a new technique, whatever. I mean, it could be, or nowadays it is like, of course, computer generated reality, like, you know, virtual reality thing. I believe you need to know about it to the deepest to be able to use those letters to create your own story. If, as so many people, you don't really know about it, but you still try to be hip and kind of use that, you're not doing anything else just to transfer, you know, like...
be part of the hipster train. Yeah.
But that's not enough.
I mean, obviously you have a big operation now and you have large scale pieces. Obviously that requires more hands than your own. As a young artist, when you start and you have these ideas, let's say a big marble piece, do you actually learn the skill, the analog skill, how to carve a piece, or it's more the idea and have someone who actually knows how to?
Good question. But you know, but it's like, if I really go back, I mean, when I was really young, which means like 19, 20, 21. Wow. And I started to study art. I mean, I tried it all somehow. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been like painting as a beginning, and then I found out that I'm really a bad painter. Okay. Then I was doing, you know, I was kind of sculptures. I was doing, you know, I was developing photographs myself. I was filming. I was whatever, doing sound pieces. I was doing all of it, I would say. But I always somehow felt better in sculpture. Or what a better. I mean, it seemed
it was
to me like
speaking
more
speaking to you.
To me, but as a young artist, of course, I could not afford to buy any of those kind of materials to make it happen.
Yeah.
So what I did in the beginning was a lot of video pieces, and like, because we had a camera in art academy and it was accessible to everyone, and there was like a, you know, like a computer, like a cutting studio. I was even running it and teaching it, and so I would just use that. So I was always trying to use what was accessible to me. But for funny reasons, I never did. So if you would see those videos, which not many people know, of course, they are very much, they are not much different to what I'm doing now. It's just like, I mean, it's just this medium, but
the tools were different.
The tools have been different, but it's not, it never has been like a narrational film. I never tried to do movies in this way. I just like tried to use this medium to do kind of abstract whatever with objects, you know, something
play
like
around
that.
With different mediums,
yeah.
I love that. We're here in Berlin, of course, and we briefly mentioned King Size, a little bar that doesn't exist anymore, where we all had some rock and roll nights, and you were DJing there.
Yeah.
But you've been here in Berlin for more than 20 years now, I would say.
I've stopped to count, I think it's more than, it's 24 or 3, something like that.
So you've seen a lot of change, the city changed a lot.
Yeah.
Obviously it was, you know, younger and more free in space and cheaper, obviously it gentrified more and more, and you know, in comparison to other capitals, it's still very liberal, but within that time period, seeing the change, how, for the better or worse, how do you see the change? And also, what song kind of defines your Berlin? Like, what's your Berlin soundtrack, basically? Or maybe even a track you played at Kingsfest.
Oh, I know exactly what I've been playing in Kingsfest. And that was, first we take Manhattan, then we take Berlin.
Oh, wow.
I loved it. But I loved it for the reasons.
Yeah.
So to be honest, I always wanted to move to New York when I was very young.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, but it's this typical kind of dream of a 13 years old when you think, okay, if I want to make it, I have to go to New York. But then for simple, you know, financial reasons of my family background, it seemed like fucking not possible to do.
Far away.
Back then. Far away, you know, how to kind of pay your rent, how to do all the things, like no support from, you know, the bank. So I decided to take the next, you know, kind of bigger city I could kind of reach out to, and that was Berlin.
Yeah.
So that's why kind of this song very much kind of was like speaking for my inner feeling about, you know.
They sentenced me to 20 years of boredom, for trying to change the system from within. I'm coming now, I'm coming to reward them. First, we take Manhattan. Then we take Berlin. I'm guided by a signal in the heavens. I'm guided by this birthmark on my skin. I'm guided by the beauty of our weapons. First, we take Manhattan.
then we take Berlin.
I can't say what it is now, really. I mean, it's not that there are so many songs which I would connect to the transformation of the city, I would say. Hard to say.
But that's a perfect track, actually.
Yeah.
But you know what? Through a different route, you made it to New York. I remember being in Central Park and right basically across from Bergdorf Goodman's, there's your piece, the clock. So I'm like, you know, you made it in a whole different way.
Yeah, it is. I mean, finally, yes. I mean, I can say yes. And I also like kind of, I mean, I've, you know, it needed me like about 20 years to kind of find my freedom with Berlin as well, because it never been like the city I thought it is the city I would like stay for. Like, I mean, that was never the plan. I mean, the more I travel and the more I'm spending time all over the world, and I can say I'm spending a lot of time all over the world, and I spend a lot of time in Europe as well. I mean, I'm there like each month almost. I mean, until there's no COVID or something, but usually. I kind of valuing the, you know, the freedom of the city so much, actually. Because I think it is, I mean, you can say whatever you want. Probably it's not as international as whatever. Probably it's not as metropolitic, you know, as other metropoles. Probably it is not having the greatest museums. Probably it is a bit, you know, regional. Probably it is a little far east. Probably it's quite empty. Probably it's quite cold. Probably it's quite, you know, that, whatever, whatever. But what it has, it is like a very wise old, I don't know, like whore, I would almost say it, who've seen everything, who met everyone, who've seen all these political things, all kind of, you know, wars and wars, and which is giving us still a very beautiful amount of freedom because nobody cares a little bit. And I still love New York, but every time I'm in New York, I feel so restricted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so everyone is telling me what to do, what not to do. Like if I'm in Asia, and I also love Asia, people tell me, like how to behave or what is not, how I can't behave, and you know, things like that, which is making me feel really like, you know, cut like in a little
constrained.
I don't feel that in Berlin. I'm really kind of glad to experience a quite a big tolerance and freedom.
Yeah, that's the beauty of Berlin. I think that's always been the case about Berlin. I think even through the different decades, why it also attracted the young and creative to come.
Yeah, and of course it's changing, but to be honest, it's normal that cities are changing. I mean, it's normal, and it's
we change, the city changes.
Yeah, it's quite, it is what it is. Yeah. It would never, I mean, you can't kind of, you know, step on the same point forever. So
exactly.
It's.
What have you recently discovered in music, art, or film that caught your attention?
I'm running a record label with my boyfriend,
Bergo
Hildebrand,
called
Zagoshki Records.
Let's do some promo.
So, of course, I mean, this is things, to be honest, like Gregor's even much more active than I am in this. We are trying to release people who are not professional artists, but more like musicians, you know, so like our friend Janek.
Schmeiß die Egoisten raus, ich. Schmeiß den Egoisten raus, mich. Schmeiß die Egoisten raus, ich. Schmeiß den Egoisten raus, mich.
Ihr verwaltet die Vergangenheit. Wir müssen auf in die Zukunft. Ihr verwaltet die Vergangenheit. Wir müssen auf in die Zukunft. Auf in die Zukunft.
Wir müssen auf in die Zukunft. Der Beat weist den Weg. Ich komme auf die Party und die Faschos müssen gehen. Guck nie zurück. Am Ende ist es schön. Das Ende der Bass. Im Leben nicht zu sehen. Auf. Lass uns losmachen. Alles was wir kennen. Loslassen. Auf. Lass uns losmachen. Alles, was wir kennen, loslassen.
Like the great band Anna.
Herbst trägt ein Kleid, Mädchen tanzt. Ein Pferd steht auf dem Teich. Meine Schritte enden. Wo du mich spürst, beginnt der Wind. Wo du mich siehst, beginnt die Zeit. Wo du mich hörst, beginnt die Nacht.
Like Copperman, like Chris Zucco. So all like bands who I'm discovering each day, you know, it's more like, oh, they are friends of friends. Oh, you're doing music. Yeah, fine. So what is it? You know, so it's more like a fun thing to do. And I'm really glad that we do that because this is like making me still think about new things, like yeah. Kind of, and listening to new music. I mean, probably it's not as new because they're all probably not 20, but like...
No,
I mean,
but it's still a new piece of art that's been created.
Yeah, so that's what I'm kind of discovering. And to be honest, I'm listening a lot of radio, which I'm very glad for, because just mostly when I'm driving here with in my car, but this is like the only medium which is like, you know, automatically bringing like new things to me without any kind of effort. But I have to admit that I'm really like, as well, because I'm asked that, on the other hand, quite a lot what I'm reading and stuff. And I never know who I'm reading. I always know what I'm reading about, but never, which is quite bad. Actually, and I feel like very, like, you know, bad. But I don't, it's more like certain points of interest I have. And it's the same in music. It's like certain points of interest I have. And I'm listening to, but I would not even be able to name the band, probably. It, until I haven't, you know, of course, like, reaches this, you know, I haven't, like, listened to it frequently. But it's just, like, more like some radio stations I kind of like to listen to because they're, like, bringing up new things.
Well, from now on, you can listen to Are We On Air, right? When you drive here,
of course,
there you go.
Yeah.
Well, I just discovered this fun little piece, this little cigarette. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
It's a colleague, Wilhelm Klotzek.
Wilhelm Klotzek.
Yeah, I also love it, yeah.
Well, let's go slightly more intimate. What's your go-to falling in love or heartbreak song?
Probably, but I'm still also connecting it probably to myself when I was like 16, 17. And you're more like kind of those feelings, which I pray, like, you know, it gets easier with age, I feel like. It was, I think, really Lou Reed quite a lot. I mean, it's more about this, you know, the kind of the atmosphere of the songs. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned this before, but still, Perfect Day is beautiful.
Let's do it. Just keep me hanging on. What's the sexiest song?
Sexiest song? I have no clue if I have any song that really... I don't care so much about sexy, I have to say. Okay. That's why...
Whatever sexy means to you.
Probably Pixies, Wave of... What's the song? It's the title again. Wave of something. I drove my car into the ocean.
It's saying, you will find out.
Yeah, I will get to read.
We're gonna fade in exactly with those lyrics. Perfect. Well, before we get to our last question, I'm just seeing your iPhone.
I actually wanted to do those sculptures for my show at Whitechapel Gallery in 2016, where I was like doing like a big mobile phone mobile. And that, of course, because I'm also like very, connected to this little tool, and I do everything with that, and I'm prominently on it. But not in a, I feel it's something very natural. I don't feel it's like, but I'm not even, I don't do the things like probably many people. I don't post anything about my private life and things like that. Yeah. So I can quite separate that. But still, I love it. I think it's a great invention. But, the sculptures which I did, it looks like a DNA helix or something. Uh-huh. But it's like made of a copy of mobile phones stuck on each other. It was like kind of, it's a Swift. And it's quite ironic, of course. But it's also how I see the world, and I think it is. It's like, through, reciving permanently images and receiving images and receiving information, receiving comments, sending out comments, blah, blah, blah. We are creating what we call reality. Mm. But we did it before as well, just different, I'm not saying we are just doing it now with the mobile
phone. Different medium.
It's a different medium. We did it before. Yeah. Just different, just a different way. It's just a little bit faster now and you can multiply it easier. But it is what most people, and I'm not really talking about myself, I don't think I do it too much, but many people, I really like building up their identities through this and with that. And I don't mean it as any kind of a critique. It's just, for me, like a fun effect. So that's why I see those sculptures like very humoristic, ironic, actually. So this is like,
It's fun. I love
what
it.
What we get is exactly. Getting two in, yeah.
I wonder if Apple has reached out to you yet.
No, I don't know not yet.
That should be like in their sculpture garden.
Yeah, probably.
Shout out to Apple. Hey, buy some sculptures. Well, to wrap up our little chat, if your life would be a movie, what song would play in the end credit?
Oh, probably Pete Doherty.
I love that. Alicia Kvade, it's been a real pleasure to have you on air with us.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Pleasure for me. Yeah. Thanks.
In Arcadia, life trips along. Pure and simple as the shepherd's song. Seraphic pipes along the way. In Arcadia, in Arcadia, in Arcadia. Never saw I such a scene. Of such fair maids upon such remote degree. Where they employ their holiday with dance. Gay and things I may never name in Arcadia. In Arcadia, where he said he was your teacher, he taught you true and wise. Well, now you know more than your teacher. See nothing but cool self-regard in your eyes.
Thank you for tuning in this week. If you want to listen to the full playlist, visit areweonair.com or our Spotify channel. You can also find us on Instagram and on YouTube at areweonair. And a big thank you to my wonderful team at Studio Noi. I'm Armand Nafei, and I'll speak to you soon.